bad week, and sort of on painkillers a little bit, and I'm a little bit vague. So I'm going to read out my... we've all had a bad week. We're all kind of raiding the cabinet. So I'm going to actually read out some of mine because I think I'll go off message quite easily today. So I do apologise. Normally I just happily riff. So I've called mine, which is sort of part of a bigger project, Cinema of Movement. And what I want to sort of consider, and it does, you know, hopefully come back to the kind of the points that, you know, Paul and Julie Louise, and by the way, thank you for organising today, guys. Good job. You know, I want to, hopefully it just comes back and sort of speaks to those questions that, you know, they've been asking. But basically what I want to do is consider some of the aesthetic and temporal forces that give us the opportunity to rethink the relationship between movement and perception. In cinema and specifically a lot of new media practice. And in doing this in quite a roundabout way today, I'll be looking at my own work and probably for those of you who don't know, it's when I say me, it's I'm generally referring to a collaboration with Anna Munster over there. Deleuze once reflected on the relationship of movement to the new sports, surfing, windsurfing and hang gliding, and how they are less reliant on what he calls points of leverage. These newer sports, he contends, takes the form of entry into an existing wave. There's no longer an origin, a starting point, but a sort of putting into orbit. The basic thing is how to get taken up into the movement of a big wave, a column of rising air, to come between rather than being the origin of an effort. So as someone who surfs, I have over time understood and felt what it is to be taken up into movement. And as a media artist who works largely with the moving image, an incident I had last year made me reflect on what this could mean cinematically. So while surfing one day, and I would like to think that Ayla Thane wrote this this quote about me personally, but I suspect she didn't. Seemed initially designed, and talking about the GoPro camera he designed and developed to accentuate the figure of the individual whose corporeal mastery of extreme sports exceeds the speed of normal perception and memory. A technological solution to the sensational imperceptibility of real-time experience, even to the one having it, the too fastness of real time. I know she didn't write it about me, but I will, I have to agree with her that in an event like surfing, even the best wave is over before you even realise it's happened. It's just over like that. GoPro cameras have become very big in not just surfing, but a lot of action sports. So I want to sort of take up an idea of the GoPro. So while surfing one day, I placed my GoPro camera on the front of my surfboard, a point of view I've never experienced before. Well, I normally attach the camera to my wrist. On this occasion, I decided to position the camera on the board pointing back at me. Such behaviour is precisely what its creator, Nick Woodman, had in mind when he designed this small, waterproof and incredibly versatile camera. But on this particular day, however, lens focused on me, an extreme wide-angle view, watching me, watching it. There is no mastery in this all-too-fast performance. As I began to go down the wave, it closed out, a reference to the whole face of the wave collapsing down simultaneously, creating a foaming soup of white water rather than the smooth curve of an unbroken wall. As I hit the now breaking wave with a good deal of force, my camera became untethered, and for the next few minutes, as I searched frantically topside with currents moving and waves hitting me, my camera, free of the constraints of my precise, imagined cinematic eye, was truly exploring the force and movement of the wave. It had unwittingly been taken up in movement, as Deleuze has suggested. What my camera experienced surprised me. There was movement, but it was completely unfamiliar to me. My camera moved and recorded the event of being underwater, not from the perspective of someone intentionally recording the events of being underwater, but from being part of the event itself. No narrative, logical, visual cues marked the moment the camera would be violently tossed across the seabed. just a distant, muffled, drone-like sound that would suddenly erupt and as quickly pass, leaving the camera either facing the sky, the undefinable watery horizon, or simply face down in the sand. Then would come the moment of stillness and calm, with the camera recording the subtle moments of water above, or the kaleidoscopic clusters of sand below. Cinematically, perhaps, the events my camera recorded made no sense. The GoPro's fixed focus, achieved by a combination of relatively short focal length and very high depth of field, resulted in extreme blurring, abruptly giving way to the intense clarity of an underwater infinity. The pauses between these bursts of movement could also be considered too long or too short. Yet those decisions were no longer mine to make. Taken from the position of movement's potential, however, the result is far more rhythmical, one in which sand, water, and camera all become part of the movement moving. I'm going to play you this. It's about 6 minutes. I'll see how I go in terms of time. I'd just about given up that because it was right in the impact zone of a wave, and the swell was quite large that day, so I kept trying to dive down and look, and I'm thinking this is just crazy. I've got no idea where it is. And the funny thing is that I was so relieved when I found it. I just took it straight back to the car and put it in the car. I wasn't gonna go in this bullshit of putting it back on the board or anything. And I almost forgot that it had been recording, and it was only later when I went to kind of just charge it, get ready for something else, that I said, oh, there's some footage on there, having forgotten that it was actually there. And it was sort of like, you know, discovering this kind of, you know, lost thing. So I'll turn the volume down, I'll keep going.
It's beautiful.
It's extraordinary, isn't it? I know. It's funny, when I first showed it to Anna, she's like, oh, that's just, we can't use that for anything. That's just like, you know. But she's coming around to it.
It's a little bit drowning, sort of like when I watch it, I feel like
right.
I need to go up for some
help. Well, yeah, that's, I mean, that's part of, you know, actually, I don't know, I'll get to what we're sort of doing now as well, but there is part of at the moment, a bit of a kind of a challenge for air in our work, I think. And this, that's certainly, that is the feel of, if you've ever, and it happens to everyone regardless of whether you surf or not, but if you get caught like on the inside of a wave and you go around, it kind of is that feeling, you know, it is this, it's completely knocking around and you don't know which way is up. But we don't tend to want to think about that and feel that, but it's interesting letting the camera do that of its own, you know, kind of free will, you know, for a better, want of a better expression, but the, you know, it where we sort of struggle with that and try and find up, it is just finding anything, you know, it's going with every kind of every movement, every flow, and how it chooses to kind of record that as well is really interesting. You know, it's like, you know, I was really quite surprised when I saw the footage, you know, and I thought, I haven't quite decided yet, you know, what, you know, where it's going to kind of live, what it will do. And so just a quote from Andrew Murphy that I thought was kind of nice in respect to this, in talking about the GoPro cameras, because this event made me think about GoPros a lot differently. In general, these little cameras are so in the middle of things, human and non-human, that they decenter the human. Even the movement of human bodies seems less human, more part of the broader world. Of course, the human is literally no longer behind the camera. The camera is more immediately moved with the forces of the world. The world, more obviously, world as medium, as Whitehead put it.
And
that's me. That was me finding it. The next shot was a big smile. Okay, so look, I'd like to just quickly consider this incident in relation to new approaches to cinematography, specifically how one might reconfigure moving images via reconsidering the relations of the moving camera to its moving subjects. How is it that we, subject, object, camera, can all get taken up into movement? So now the still dominant understanding of the moving image operates on the assumption that a series of discrete moments are held together by the speed of projection, or digital playback. Here it's the arc of moving images over a period of time that sets up the movement within film. However, the moving image moves whether we look at it from the perspective of a single frame or across frames. Movement within the still image or frame is already there before we put frames together and make them succeed each other. So essentially, movement precedes playback. Now, this idea of the moving image in a single frame returns us, and this is a lot of stuff that Erin Manning has done, in terms of her sort of discussion of Etienne Jules Marais and his experiments, to the idea that every image is a moving image. So how then might we see this moving still manifest itself in other cinematic forms? And it's this approach to cinematography that's very much driving the work that Anna and I are actually doing at the moment. And in that respect, I find it really interesting to go back to some of the ideas that Marais was exploring, you know, 150 years ago. And that's just a still from Marais there. Okay, so cinema's movement has always been tied to speed, and the more frames, the better. Recently on a film shoot for Anna's and my new work, the cinematographer used a camera called a Phantom Flex. And this is no ordinary camera. 24, 25, 120 frames a second have become pretty much standard speeds in even consumer cameras. The Phantom shoots 2,000 frames a second at broadcast quality and up to 240,000 frames at considerably reduced resolutions. The inverse of shooting at incredibly fast speeds is the ability to play back footage at over 10,000 times slower than the normal rate. But the question remains, however, are there actually 2,000, let alone 240,000 different micro-movements to be broken down for every second our bodies or anything else that moves are in motion? At a cost of $150,000, this camera is generally out of my league and more suited to a lot of sort of scientific studies, which is where it's predominantly used. And so what could I do with only artistic footage to analyse? Does the measurement of movement into increasingly vast micro-perceptible data give us access to the promised unseen? And what exactly is meant by the imperceptible? And looking at the movement machines of Marais, I'd echo what Manning has said, that the imperceptible here has more to do with the feeling, a sense, than just an actual seen movement. So, and she contends that if Marais' experiments with movement had been foregrounded, there may have been less emphasis on narrative, and that cinema's histories could have converged around concepts of force rather than ideas of representation. So while we can now forensically analyse the rich detail offered by superfast frame rates, I suggest that we can also learn by feeling the force of movement rather than scraping to see it. And such scraping is never satisfied. We can never see all that is unseeable because there will always be something left over to divide and measure. And this was Bergson's critique of illusion of motion, in which time and movement are made to coincide at the divisible line that underlies both. So the paradox here is that the more we see the subdivisions, the more the subdivisions keep coming. The subdividable line or increasing quality of image data never attains a state of complete seeability, that is, complete perceptibility of the imperceptible. To feel imperceptibility instead requires a new approach to the creation of images that create movement. How am I going?
You've gone over, but you've got a minute left.
Do I? Okay. I love that. See, this is how time should work. while Bergson was critical of cinema as a way of exploring this idea of time, we sort of go back via Deleuze, who actually argued that particular forms of cinema can actually operate with an idea of a flow and a bleeding rather than discrete frames anymore. So rethinking movement within the moving image requires a break from seeing sequentiality as key. Rather, I'd suggest that frames need to bleed. So Bergson offered us a space where movement is not about progressive motion, but rather about affective experience. Thus, time is a qualitative experience, not a quantitative measure. Within this continuum, our present is constantly intermingling with our past. And just a slight taster of what's to come. Watch this space. This is on location for our new work, which will be out and about at galleries near you. It'll be touring for 3 years through Experimenta, who commissioned the piece. So and we're starting at RMIT in October. It's called Pool, there's just a shot of the imperceptible of the wave. So, sorry, compressed there, but time will expand again, so it's fine. Okay, thank you.